This is 89.1 WEMU, and this is the first Friday in the month of February. And with that in mind, welcome to WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm David Fair, and on each First Friday, we explore important environmental issues with special guests. And my partner and co-host is Lisa Wozniak. Lisa serves as CEO and President of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. And Lisa, fair to say, it's been a fascinating and perhaps challenging start to the new year.
Indeed it has, David. And our guest today has certainly had a challenging and interesting few months. Alyssa Slotkin is one of the Democratic U.S. Senators from Michigan and has come under fire recently from President Trump in a rather startling and alarming fashion. And all the while, she has continued to work on issues that protect the health and the safety of our natural environment, among other things. Senator Slotkin, thank you so much for taking out time out of your very busy schedule to join us on WEMU.
We appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, the first component of the environment we need to discuss is that political environment in Washington. It's been polarized for quite some time now, but in this second term of this administration, the tone and tenor have become darker and perhaps more troubling to many. What characteristics and actions of this administration are you most concerned about?
Well, I think, look, I mean, you know, we just passed the sort of 1 year, anniversary of President Trump being in office. And so that always prompts some reflection. I think we have a combination of things. Certainly everything he ran on and everything he said he was going to do on affordability, on housing, on the price of groceries, on the price of utilities, you know, we haven't seen, frankly, almost any action on any of those things. What we've seen instead is a real ramping up of kind of going after those fundamental democratic freedoms that I think all Americans, regardless of party, really care about. And I think nowhere has that been more apparent than in what's going on in Minneapolis. And I think, even in a state like Michigan, which is very politically diverse, that just the number of people who have come up to me in the past month, the first month of 2026, to say how startled they are about the sort of the right to protest, the right to free speech, the right to, you know, not have someone come into your home without a real warrant from a judge. Those are the kinds of things I hear about quite a bit and have characterized 2026 in this short time.
Do you think there's any hope at all for bipartisan action to put in place some guardrails to deter the administration from this continued retribution, threats, and misuse of their powers?
Well, look, I do think a number of my Republican peers here in the House and Senate have been more vocal than we've seen them be in the past year. And I think the proof is in the pudding. You know, we passed a bunch of budgets last week, full year appropriations, which is, you know, what the legislature does. And the Republicans were basically told by President Trump to separate, you know, to allow our plan, our Democratic plan, to separate out the Department of Homeland Security budget from the other budgets, because he knew that the response from, you know, the grassroots in America was not good. And that's not just on Democratic sides. I mean, when you lose Joe Rogan on what you're doing, you know, it's a sign on both sides of the aisle. So we've seen some of my colleagues be a little bit more willing to show some leg and say some things that are more critical. I think we measure success here in millimeters, not in feet. But you can kind of spin a lot of things. But when you see a video of an American citizen being killed in the streets for protesting, you know, your eyes don't lie. And I think a lot of Americans were deeply, deeply struck by those videos.
Now, we saw environmental program cuts and policy rollbacks with the first Trump administration, and it's only accelerated in the second term. There have been budget and staffing cuts at the EPA and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, cancellations of renewable energy projects, rollbacks of air water quality standards. We're just beginning year two of the administration. Do you anticipate this is a trend that will continue into and through 2026?
Yeah, you know, I think, and I talked about this with Lisa and others, I think it's very important to take stock of some of the lessons learned from some of these environmental rollbacks. I mean, some of them are just gratuitous, right? Some of them are looking at certain energy sources or looking at certain programs and just labeling them woke and cutting them gratuitously. But on the other side of the coin, they're making some pretty major mistakes when it comes to the issue of affordability and cutting some of those green energy projects in places like the Upper Peninsula, cutting some of these programs that are meant to protect our local communities. These are the things that will boomerang on the American people, and you're getting a whole chorus of voices coming out against some of these gratuitous cuts. And so I think using the frame of affordability and saying, you know, we want to protect our local communities, but at the end of the day, we also can't stand our energy bills being as high as they are. We need to do something about that. And all of the above energy approach is the way we get to that. Those are some of the lessons learned that I think are important for advocating for the programs I know a lot of Michiganders care about.
I know Lisa wants to continue down that path. I'll first remind you, our First Friday Focus on the Environment conversation with U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin continues on 89.1 WEMU. And again, the other voice is Lisa Wozniak. She is my co-host from the Michigan League of Conservation Voters.
So last year, the administration declared a so-called energy emergency and mandated that Consumers Energy, among other energy companies all across this country, keep open here in Michigan the J.H. Campbell Coal Power Plant in West Michigan, which was supposed to be retired last year in May. Experts said that keeping that 63-year-old facility open would only drive up the cost of electricity and keep pollution levels high, both of which have happened. And the company itself wanted it closed. The people of Michigan wanted it closed, both because of the air pollution and the costs. What can be done to truly tackle this backwards approach to energy policy and protect our state and our nation from a greater return to a reliance on fossil fuels?
Yeah, I think this is a perfect example of what I was just mentioning, right? I mean, and the Campbell plant out on the west side of the state is like a perfect example of what happens when you take a broad brush approach and you don't actually look at like the impact of what you're proposing. The plant was literally days away from decommissioning. The coal was not being transported to the plant. Literally, like the rail lines weren't going in there anymore. They had taken equipment out of the plant, and Consumers Energy and like you said, the community were like, this was on tap to be retired because it was too old. And the administration overrode that plan because of the president's sort of ideological obsession with this plan. And just, again, for everyone's awareness, that costs consumers now $4.3 million a week to keep running. Okay. So what do you think happens when Consumers Energy is forced to pay $4.3 million a week for how many months now? Who do you think they pass that cost on to?
Consumers.
Who is going to pay for that decision, that ideological decision? The ratepayers of Michigan, you know, and I have consumers. So I think it's just important, again, there's a whole raft of environmental reasons why we want coal to be transitioned out over time when it gets too old. But man, right now, keeping that plant open is just going to boomerang on America and Michigan ratepayers. And I think we need to highlight that issue, not just the environmental issue.
As we look at our energy future, we're going to have to take into consideration artificial intelligence and the proliferation of data centers here locally and around the country. And what role should the federal government play in supporting innovation at the same time, not compounding our environmental challenges, crushing ratepayers with rising electricity costs?
Yeah, so this is obviously, I think, going to be the hot issue of 2026. We saw data centers bring protests and, you know, activism and good old fashioned democratic engagement at, you know, rural town council, township council meetings and county council meetings in Michigan in the past year. I think it's only going to accelerate in 2026 because these companies have figured out that the Midwest is a good place to try and put some of these data centers. Now, the truth is we have a conundrum. We are all using more power across the board. Energy demand is going up. And then we have this artificial intelligence race, particularly with the Chinese, but sort of akin to the nuclear race back in the 30s and 40s. Like whoever gets there first really does kind of dominate on this new technology. So you have the demand going up and you have the spotlight being put on the Midwest. But here's the thing, that AI race in particular, shouldn't come at the expense of our local water, our utility costs, our land, all of those things. And so we have to figure out how to put appropriate left and right limits on these centers. And in many cases, the decision makers are at the hyper local level, right? It's our, like, again, township supervisors and councils. And we have home rule in Michigan, so our smallest unit of government has a lot of power. So we need to help those communities understand what they should be, what conversations should they be having with these companies, what kind of left and right limits. I think there's a real problem that these companies are coming in and making everybody sign NDAs, which just makes everyone more suspicious of, like, what's being, you know, talked about behind closed doors. The state needs to help with that. The federal government needs to help provide some of those left and right limits. But at the end of the day, I think communication from those local officials early and often with the public and with other, you know, with the state and with the federal level is the best way to put on some of those left and right limits.
You know, as we come to the end of our conversation, one thing that's top of mind for me is the security of our elections. And looking at the fact that we believe in the integrity of the vote and one person, one vote in this country, the president has called for a nationalization of our elections. What do you think the U.S. Congress and those who run elections in Michigan can and should do to make sure we have free and fair elections here in 2026?
Yeah, well, just to review the bidding, our election system was designed by our founding fathers to make sure that an executive at the president couldn't dominate and take over ensure their own victory by taking over elections in the states. They purposely distributed the power of conducting elections so that no one man or woman could control them from Washington. And here we have the president saying very openly the exact opposite of what our founding fathers proposed. So I have a real problem with that, and I think most people do. The good news is most officials that I know, certainly in the state of Michigan, but in other states, feel very strongly that they know how to run elections. They do them to the utmost highest levels of the law. They're transparent about those things, and they will continue to exercise the authority given in the Constitution to conduct elections. It's very dangerous when the president talks like this. He's saying the quiet part out loud, and I think we need to hear what he's saying, that this is something that he is going to be interested in pursuing. And we need to make sure at the state level and certainly across the country that our elections officials have a stiff spine when it comes to these attempts to encroach. The state of Michigan is already one of the 20 plus states that's been asked for our voter rolls. We're pushing back on that, as are many other states suing. So this is a very live issue. But again, regardless of whether you're a Democrat, independent, or Republican, we should all believe that free and fair elections executed in with the authorities given by the Constitution is the most important thing for continuing our democracy as we know it.
With these elections in mind, you've pointed out there are issues of affordability, jobs, the economy, quality of life to push forward. Will the Democratic Party prioritize environmental issues in the platform or simply wrap it into the affordability conversation?
Well, look, you know, I don't know who controls the pen on that. I will just tell you that, you know, maybe it's because of my background and, you know, you got to be objective and look at the evidence. Sometimes talking about the big issues around climate change, which are so real, it's almost too much for people to take when they're struggling and they can't afford, you know, to buy a home. They can't afford to send their kid to summer camp. We need to meet people where they are and help them understand that those big issues, you know, that seem very far away are actually very locally controlled, very present in their lives and have a role in their kitchen table issues. And I think that's our challenge, particularly as Michiganders, is, you know, there's no more bipartisan issue than the Great Lakes, our water and our waters. And how do we connect the big environmental issues that feel very far away to their local watershed, their river, their lake that they live on? That's our challenge, is not to, we can't give up on these environmental issues, quite the opposite. But we do need to take lessons learned from the last 20 years and say, you know what, The way that we get people engaged on these issues is by meeting them where they are, not asking them to think about something that's not like kind of in their next 6 months. So that's something I try to do is, you know, environmental issues are local issues and they're national security issues, and we should talk about them as such.
Senator Slotkin, thank you so much for making time today and starting out the year with us on WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment.
Happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
That is Michigan Senator Alyssa Slotkin, and Lisa Wozniak is the other voice you've been hearing. She is the CEO and president of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and co-host of WEMU's First Fridays. Lisa, I'm always happy to share time with you, and we'll see you next month.
I look forward to it, David.
I'm David Fair, and this is your community NPR station, 89.1 WEMU-FM Ypsilanti.